Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk to Pat Forty about Caitlin Clark's record-breaking night. We'll chat with Jeff Passan about the top free agents left on the market as pitchers and catchers report. Pitchers and catchers, greatest three words in the English language. Pitchers and catchers. But first, boys and girls, let's do some commerce.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Daniel knows that I want to do things that are not necessarily hardcore sports, and we want to be varied. Like on birthdays, for example, Daniel will say it's this birthday and that birthday. And if he gets to a Chicago Cub or Chicago Bear, I go, no. Chicago Bull, no. No, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. We're not going to listen to Wilbon on this. We're not going to do it. He says, but it's Michael Jordan. I don't care. I don't care. We have enough Jordan.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Speaking of references to the PTI show, there was an open yesterday, a Valentine's Day open.
Right? Yeah, roses are, yeah.
What you, no, oh, those, you know, what did you do?
Oh, what did you do? That's right.
And
yes.
I said I watched the Niagara Ice Dogs against the Erie Otters in OHL action. We get this. Listen to this. Hi, Tony. I watch you and Mike Daly on PTI and love it. You made my day, my year today. When you open with the comment about watching the Niagara Ice Dogs, I'm sitting here in St. Catharines, Ontario, and for 16 years, I have been the play-by-play voice of the Niagara Ice Dogs. You will be the open of our game tomorrow night. Thanks for the logic and the entertainment. Ted Lehman, Niagara Ice Dogs play-by-play.
How great
that's unbelievable.
That?
I mean, honestly, that's simply, right? Michael, Sean, that's unbelievable.
With this show, it's nothing's crazy. Unbelievable.
The Niagara Ice Dogs, he does the play-by-play. That, Eric wrote that.
Yeah.
Eric wrote the line. I've never heard of the Niagara Ice Dogs, although I've been to Niagara Falls a lot of times.
But now you're a big fan.
Yes. Shen, great. That's just so great. All right. You know, we're going to have Pat Forty on the show today, and we're going to talk a lot about Caitlin Clark. I just want to mention, I watched the first half of that, and she hit the shot that broke the record and made her the highest scoring NCAA D1 in women's college basketball ever, was from the logo. And she said afterwards she wanted to do it from the logo because that's her shot. That's what she does. She's a natural crowd pleaser. I've got to assume it was meaningful to her to break the record at home and to do it on a night when she scored 49. And I've got to assume she wanted 49 or 50 or 60. That she was going to gun it,
yeah.
You know, because she's at home and she's going to get all this acclaim anyway. So why not have one of the great nights ever? And we'll get to this with Pat Forty, but I'll just be very brief here. At some point, she's going to break Pete Maravich's record. I think it's a very dangerous business to compare women to men in sports. I don't think it's a wise thing to do. Pete Maravich averaged over 40 points a game in all of his only three years in college because he wasn't allowed to play as a freshman. Caitlin Clark has 4 years now and could get a fifth year. To say, oh, she's better than Maravich, don't be nuts. But the comparison to Maravich to me is valid because she actually thinks pass first. If you watched her last night, as she's coming up the court, she just wants to pass it. She's a great scorer and a great ball handler, but she wants to pass the ball, and that's what Maravich, the two greatest college passers I ever saw were Pete Maravich and Ernie DiGregorio, and you pretty much have to be my age to know who they are and to have seen them. Tiger Woods, I'm glad Michael is here, because Tiger Woods opened yesterday a very nondescript round on 18 at Riviera, which is the famous hole where you walk up the hill afterwards into the clubhouse, and that's a hard walk. Tiger went shankopotamus. Did you see that, Michael?
Yes, he owned it. He presented the hosel first.
Just total shankopotamus. Later said he had back spasms. Look, we're all thrilled to see Tiger, but he physically, he can't play anymore anywhere near the level he had, right?
I would say yes and no. This is historically a tournament that means a lot to him, which is why he's now the host of it. You look at when he was an amateur playing here when he was, I think, 16 years old, kid from Southern California. But when you think about the demands that this walk has, this is one of the few courses where you can even see through TV the elevation change from number one tee all the way down to the sixth green that has that bunker in the middle. If you look out over the tee box of one down towards the 18th green, towards that sixth green, you're basically going straight downhill to the ocean. And if you watched him tee off, you saw him hobbling down the cart path, and he's someone who famously likes to wear metal spikes. So this is always going to be a tough ask, regardless of how difficult the course is. This is a major course. This has really tricky Poana greens. So you're not going to expect a lot. You saw a lot of good shots, but you also saw a lot of missed opportunities. So are you surprised with the score at the end of the day, the one over? No, but you also look, you saw Max Homa get to two over. You saw Justin Thomas, and I think you saw another player who I think whom you want to get to finished with a pretty dramatic back nine.
Yeah, that's Rory McIlroy, who is back in the United States and not being a cheerleader for the PGA Tour again. Probably feels, I'm guessing here, probably feels they stabbed me in the back and I'm not going to carry water for him anymore. And that's fine. He's a very interesting guy, smart guy, Rory. But Michael, he had a terrible patch, right? Did he drop 54 places on the leaderboard in five holes, something like that?
Yeah, you look at just 15 through 18, he goes double, triple, birdie, oof, bogey to finish. And I think it all started with the under the shadows of Bogey's tree on, I believe it was on 12, as he gets to this back nine stretch. Now, this is, you're looking at what happens when you have these signature events, and these players are really forced to play, not always when they want to. And you just think the travel that's been going on, just sort of the wear and tear on your body when you're coming off of pretty big weather affected week. So the bummer is you're getting these players to play and you're guaranteeing them through four rounds because these are no-cut events, but you're not always going to see the sharpest golf because of that. I think on the flip side, the cool story is you look at somebody like Charlie Hoffman, who barely got into this tournament, asked Tiger for a special invite because Tiger's the host. Tiger said, sorry, bud, you're going to have to play your way in. And he did. That's the new schedule working. And then you also see Tiger, who clearly was listening to a lot of the criticism when Gary Woodland, who's coming off of pretty significant brain surgery, did not get into the Pebble tournament where he won the U.S. Open a couple years back, and he was playing in Tiger's group. So it's sort of going both ways where you're seeing the pressures and the strains on some of those top names, but you're also seeing how this new ecosystem should work.
Tiger remains the most captivating figure in golf, even when we don't think he's a threat to win tournaments, although he may be a threat to win Augusta because he's won it so many times. But he remains head and shoulders in stature above everybody else on the tour. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, it's why we're breaking down these sartorial choices when it comes to sun, space, day, space, red. Has to be the rule of three, right?
Yes.
No, this is the danger. You look at how the tour seemingly got itself in this weak position because you're still relying on the personality of T-Dubs, but then you look out across the guys he's playing with, and Justin Thomas, who has that club twirl finish, and you look at the guys who used to be wearing the TW Nike logo. You see the influence that he has on the style of all these players, and you see the way he just moves through the course. There's a different level of calm, a different style as he walks around, even when he's not playing his best, that it's hard not to look at, but it always stalls that next generation from trying to figure out their own their own way to own the course or to own the screen. You look at Max Homa, who's done a really good job started by just being the funny guy that you saw on Twitter, and then it turned into someone who was backing it up with wins and really thoughtful responses. That's sort of the new model for what the tour should promote and what it's trying to with these sort of on-course interviews, but there's still nothing like watching Tiger walk down through the fairways.
It's true. It's absolutely true. And Tiger was a loner for a long period of time. And Tiger had...
Intentionally so. There's some guys who just aren't welcomed into the club, and he kept everyone at arm's length.
He did that all the time, and yet the younger generation of golfers who are now in their 30s revere him beyond words. Right, Michael? Revere him.
Yeah. Again, you're now past the group of players who started playing because of Tiger, and you're entering this next generation where you even have, you know, father-son, parent-child relationships because of Tiger's play and because of these memorable tournaments. It's not just my generation where, you know, we sit there and remember getting that SI for Kids edition with Tiger on the cover and sort of peeling out the cards. And now it's sort of a rite of passage. The first time you get to meet Tiger, the first time you get to play with him. And I think he's gotten to be pretty good the last couple of years as to understanding how he needs to dole out these moments for the tour to share the wealth and just to give these little glimpses. I mean, one of the biggest reveals this week was in a practice round, they have In-N-Out Burger, and they're reporting on him getting a double-double and then ripping off the pickles, which I don't think is traditionally served with a double-double. And that's actually the content that people want to see, Tiger throwing out pickles when he's eating a cheeseburger.
Fantastic. Probably you're wondering...
What do you think of the Sunday red, by the way?
Well, yesterday's outfit, the white outfit?
The very white on gray, the shoes.
I can't get... Tiger always looks good. Tiger is the most... Let me just say this. I don't want to say Tiger is stylish. I will say that Tiger creates style for everybody else. Tiger is in the vanguard all the time, and he always looks good. That logo is creepy, okay? It's skeletal and predatory, and I don't like the logo. And I understand the rationalization that the bones, there's 15 of them to represent the amount of majors that he's won. Is that right? 15, 16, whatever it is.
My goodness, that's some symbolism there.
Yeah, and I just thought, no.
On the last legs.
No, we're counting bones here. It's no good.
I will say on the coverage, from a distance, it's one of those things where if you blur your eyes a little bit, it kind of looks like whatever you want it to look like, which I think might be the point.
Maybe. I can't get past the fact that it looks hungry, that it hasn't eaten in a long time.
Emaciated Tiger.
It's not great. By the way, for those of you wondering why I haven't talked at great length about NBA games last night, it's because I don't have to. This is my podcast. Although I will say Doc Rivers lost again. Milwaukee lost again. I think their record is 3-7 with Doc Rivers.
Yeah, it's not.
And I think there are some people who are thinking,
it's not even the playoffs yet.
Ooh, did we make a mistake here?
Yeah.
Is he the wrong guy? I don't know. I always thought he was the right guy.
It seemed like a perfect situation for him. But the early tabulations.
And last night, Lillard and Antetokounmpo played and scored points. And they lost to Memphis. Memphis stinks. Memphis stinks.
Well, John Wall's still out there. Maybe they could...
Oh, God. On that note, we will take a break. Pat Forty first or Jeff Passan first? What's the order?
Pat Forty first.
Pat Forty when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Hershey Bell, a friend of Scott Parker, who is midlife's crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Hershey writes, I'm a home studio musician in Fayetteville, North Carolina, originally from Toronto. Go Leafs. I was at the 1967 Stanley Cup Parade, and I've been suffering for the last 57 years. Please accept my song, Don't Add to My Suffering. Day job, I am the dean of one of the nation's newest applicant medical schools, Methodist University Cape Fear Medical School of Medicine. But my love is music. Been composing since age 12, 1969, so born in 1957, and the first song I ever fell in love with was the Beatles' Penny Lane. And all these years later, I've teamed up with Steve Rosenbotham on vocals, Adam Rogers on bass, and Ben Holmes on drums, and we wrote the song Cotton Candy Morning, which is based on a photo of a friend of mine posted from her porch, which overlooks Lake Erie. She commented it was a cotton candy sky. Hope you like it. We went for the Fab Four vibe. Hershey Bell, very, very nice. Playing in Pat 40. I found out that I do have Peacock. So I sat in front of the television set last night to watch Caitlin Clark. I watched half. I didn't watch the whole game, you know, but I watched half. I watched her break the record. I watched as Iowa couldn't shake Michigan for the first half at all because Iowa does not play any defense down low at all, and people get shots at will. I don't know if you watched, but she breaks the record, and she's exultant. You know, and she broke the record the way she wanted to by hitting one from about 35 feet. What are your thoughts on Caitlin Clark and the record, and did you watch?
I did. Like you, I found out I had Peacock. I was reasonably sure, but there's some gray area of like, okay, does one of my sons or my daughter actually have this subscription, or do I? And, you know, do I need to pirate the feed? No, it worked. I got to watch it. It was fantastic. And, yeah, for her to break it on that kind of shot was perfect, because she shoots it like no woman's basketball player I've ever seen. She's Steph Curry of women's basketball, I would say. Just incredible range and a beautiful fluid motion. And she's just a dynamite player who's really fun to watch. So that was great. And then I did keep watching because she kept scoring.
Yeah.
It was incredible. I wanted to see her get 50. She stopped at 49, but it was an incredible show.
So we talked about this yesterday on PTI, and I'm interested in your thoughts. She does not have a championship, with the exception maybe of Lisa Leslie, the all-time great women's college players. They all have championships. I mean, most of them went to, you know, Tennessee or UConn, which is guaranteed to be in the championship, you know, for a period of time, for about 10 to 12 years to 15 years or whatever it was. And they've got, many of them have multiple championships. Breanna Stewart has four. If Caitlin Clark doesn't get one, is it a downgrade?
I don't think so. She's elevated a program to a different level, you know, at Iowa there, and I think you get credit for that. She's been to a Final Four, been to a championship game. You get credit for that, and it's just awfully hard to break the power structure that is in women's college basketball. It's getting better. It's getting more diverse at the top. You know, it used to be, it was just UConn and Tennessee.
That's right.
And now recently we've had Stanford, we've had South Carolina, we've had LSU. So there's a little bit more, you know, I think, competitiveness. It's not just two or three programs that are completely head and shoulders above everyone else. And I think she gets partial credit for that. So, I mean, ideally, if she wants to go down as the greatest player in women's basketball history, she would win a championship. But I still think I give her a whole lot of credit for her career, even if they don't this year.
So Mike was of the opinion that it's an exclusive club of the great women players and the great men players who have won championships. And if you don't get it, you don't get into the club. And my position was, no, not with her. There's no downgrade with her. She moves the needle like nobody moves the needle in college basketball now, men's or women's. It's dangerous to compare men and women in the same sport, but nobody moves the needle like she does. Nobody gets me to sit and find out if I have Peacock to see if I can watch a little bit of this. And the crowds she draws and the money for scalped tickets, that is, you know, that secondary market is created because of her. I don't know that we've seen, maybe Cheryl Miller, but I don't know that we've seen anyone like Caitlin Clark before. What are your thoughts?
I agree. And she has. She has brought a ton of new eyeballs to women's basketball. I mean, incredible amount of, I think, just worked as an exposure agent for that sport. And, you know, I'm not even sure. I don't think Cheryl Miller did that. Now, it's also, it's easier to watch games now than it was then. So there's more games on. There's more
yes.
ways to see it. But people are doing it. They're finding the games, you know. And, like, that was a, I don't know what the ratings will be for last night, but for a Peacock-streamed game, there sure seemed to be a lot of people watching that. And, again, like, she is great television. She's, you know, unbelievably skilled and exciting player. She's a wonderful shooter and fairly emotive on the court, too. You know, some people don't like the emotions necessarily from her, but she's demonstrative, and people respond, I think, to watching her play. So she, this is not a matter of, oh, you have to win a championship to be validated, I don't think, because she has done a lot for that sport.
And not just a gunner. She is pass first every time she comes down the floor. Her assist total last, I think she had like 13 or 14 assists last night. She's the only person ever with 3,000 points and 1,000 assists. I will compare her to Maravich in the sense of that's the orientation of basketball. They always were pass first, even though they were great scorers. And I would also say that for some of these great names in college basketball, like Shamiqua Holdsclaw and Diana Taurasi and people like that, when they played, they were playing on teams that were so great that you went to see the team, not the individual. With Caitlin Clark, you don't know who's playing on Iowa. You're going for her, right? It's different.
100%. No doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, UConn, yes, that was a program. That was a team, still is. Tennessee in the day, same thing. And with Iowa, apologies to the other players, but it's Caitlin Clark. And she's the one filling the stands. She is the one, bringing out the kids wanting autographs, wearing her jersey. That is a one person show, kind of to me. It's not the same as Larry Bird at Indiana State, because Iowa's obviously been a legitimate program already. But in terms of just one player who has taken that thing to a different level, there have not been many in men's basketball like her, I think. And you're right that, I mean, she's a fantastic passer. I mean, she
yes,
throws unbelievable
really
passes.
Which,
yeah. Another way I would compare her to Steph Curry. Steph Curry's a very good passer. He's just a better shooter, so you shoot it more often. But, I mean, she was throwing bullets last night. She sees the game so well, sees the floor, has, you know, really a lot of confidence in that area of her game. So she's just fun to watch.
We take this for granted this year that she's the biggest star in college basketball. And again, comparisons between men and women, that's a rabbit hole you don't want to go down. But I think it is noteworthy that a woman is the biggest star in college basketball right now, Pat. That's noteworthy.
Oh, it's incredibly noteworthy. Extremely. Mm. And, you know, some people say, well, that's a condemnation of the men's game. I don't think so. I think she's just that good and that fun. Now, yes, could we maybe benefit from having somebody who was a little bit more of flashy and sensational the way she is in the men's game on a star team? Like, Zach Edey is a great player and is fascinating in his own way, but he's not, you know, he stands 5 feet from the basket and he turns and he tears the rim down.
That's,
you know,
right.
It's not the
That's
same.
Right.
You're not watching the same kind of basketball. So, yeah, there is nobody in the men's game who's remotely, no, I don't think, is interesting. I mean, she's got her State Farm commercials. She's, you know, she's on a different level.
I agree with that. Let me move off this to something that amused me tremendously the other day. The notion first that there is a Pac-12, and the notion next that the Pac-12 remaining schools, all two of them, Washington State and Oregon State, want to get paid like a Power 5 conference. Can you explain this to people as to what they're asking for? And maybe you're not like me and you just don't find this ludicrous. I said on the air if you believe in Tinkerbell, maybe you believe there's a Pac-12. But for the rest of us, this is a charade now. What do you think? What do they want?
I find it hilarious. And, like, I'm totally in favor of the Washington State president money grab here. Kirk
yes,
Schultz.
Me too. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you ruined my athletic department, but I have a chance to hold you hostage. I'm doing it. You know? It's like, don't ask me. Oh, you're standing in the way of progress. Oh, yeah? You destroyed my entire athletic department. Sorry. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. So, yeah. Basically, the Pac-12 will cease to exist here at the end of the 2023-24 academic season. And then there are two teams that still have the name and that still have quote-unquote power conference affiliation and autonomous voting within the college football playoff structure. And Kirk Schultz is like, you know what? We're using it. And it's like, we are not going to roll over because you need unanimous voting to change the structure of the playoff. And so they want to go, obviously, they want one fewer automatic qualifying bid for champions. And so he's like, well, no. He's basically, and yes, it's not quite as principled as, you know, Tiananmen Square standing up with your hand in front of the tanks, because
right.
because he really just wants to get paid. He's not
That's
trying
all.
To stop the injustice. He wants to get paid. So he will, and I hope it's a lot, and I hope people are mad at him forever, but I'm not.
Wilbon is always saying to me he believes that a Pac-12 will be reconstituted. At my age, I look at it and I say, if you don't have USC and UCLA, what are we really talking about here? If you have second-tier schools, you know, that currently populate parts of the Mountain West or parts even of the Big 12, then it's just not the same, but he says it will reform. Do you think it will ever?
I mean, I would say this, that we're looking, I believe, the new Big Ten contracts for 8 years, media rights contract, and we'll see, maybe after 8 years, when UCLA is getting its teeth kicked in all the time, and Washington and Oregon are miserable traveling back and forth across the country, they'll say, you know what? Maybe this wasn't a good idea. Or the other possibility is there's still this football league, but then that doesn't include the Pac-12. But they say, you know what? This is so dumb for the rest of our sports. Let's reconstitute the Pac-12 as a all sports other than football league. I don't know whether that could happen. I don't know how easily it would happen. But there's a lot of people exploring the possibility of kind of just sending football on its own way in general in college sports, because it has such a different economic reality and causes a lot of problems for all the other sports. So maybe that's an avenue towards it, but I wouldn't sit here and say, yeah, I'd say that's likely.
We'll see what happens down the road. Plug your podcast for us.
Yes, sir. The College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel and Ross Dellinger, Yahoo Sports. You can find it on, you know, all the platforms, and we'll talk about a lot of stuff on there, too.
Thank you, Pat.
My pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
Pat 40, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will have Jeff Passan when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Max Million, who says, I'd like to submit a song called Real Men Dance, the fourth single from my Quadrivium project, which was released in July of last year. The song is about the unattainable and unrealistic expectations people put on others and how no one can live up to what others expect, nor should they. Respect is the key. Be you. And he says, thank you for the opportunity you give to independent artists. And he talks about his friends who have been on the show, Jeff Raines, Midlife's Crisis, Scott Parker, the second person today.
Yes.
Hershey Bell also mentioned
the great hub.
Scott Parker and the Henrys on your previous show. So thank you for your support. Again, this is called Real Men Dance. And Michael, if you are an independent artist like Max Million or like Hershey Bell and you want your music played here, how do you do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com. And I'm happy to remind our listeners that we have a Johnny O code. Johnny O's back with us, TKT, as Grandpa Tony is searching for the perfect pocketless tee. I think
yes.
He's going to try something called the course performance tee this winter.
I will. I don't like t-shirts with pockets.
No.
Not for me. The music plays in Jeff Passan, and I will set this up this way. There are five huge free agents. Well, they're not all huge, but they're big free agents. They all are in the Scott Boras group. They are, and I'm trying to list these in my order of attraction. Cody Bellinger, Blake Snell, the incumbent, by the way, Cy Young winner. Jordan Montgomery, Matt Chapman, J.D. Martinez had a great year last year. I think he had 33 home runs and 101 RBI. It's pitchers and catchers are there. Baseball is going to start. What's going to happen with these fellas and Scott Boras, who, as I often say on television, may or may not be the devil?
I'm not going to call him the devil, Tony. I will say this, though. All five of those guys will get jobs. They will wind up with big league teams. They will get paid exceptional, ridiculous amounts of money, and they will go on with their lives. But let us not forget, you know, 4 or 5 years ago at this point, when two free agents even bigger than any of the guys that you listed, were still not signed. And those were Manny Machado and Bryce Harper.
Right.
This happens when you have a free market system without a cap. It doesn't happen very often because, you know, there are levers in place that tend to make an agreement worthwhile for both parties. But this, I think, is just one of those years where, whether it's because of Diamond Sports bankruptcy and, you know, the entire model of local television blowing up for Major League Baseball, or for other reasons that we may not understand or know at this point, the agreements haven't happened yet. And the players that you talked about, Tony, they're just too good not to get paid really well. They just may not get paid as well as what Scott Boras hoped for going into the winter. And at this point, it's just a staring contest. Who's going to blink first? Is it going to be the guy who wants a job and who wants to get into spring training and doesn't want to feel rusty going into the season? Or is it going to be a team that suffers an injury early in spring training or feels like, you know, maybe its team isn't as good as it thought it was going to be?
I look at these people, and certainly at the top of my list, Bellinger and maybe Snell more than Bellinger, I would think there'd be huge competition among teams for those two, right?
One would have to believe. And look, you talk with general managers, and they all say more or less the same thing, and not in a collusive way, but just in, you know, the kind of way, like, how is Scott Boras still asking for these obscene numbers for guys? You know, if he were operating in reality or a little bit closer to reality, then there would probably be a deal at this point. But you look back at Scott Boras's history, and when the man asks for obscene numbers, he typically gets them. I mean, we can't forget Chris Bryant's 7-year, $182 million contract that was a complete rabbit pulled out of a hat from the Colorado Rockies. Or Harper, where he waited until mid-March, and the Phillies still gave him $330 million. Now, it was over 13 years, so the average annual value of that deal wasn't quite up to the level that some of his peers are at, but it was still $330 million guaranteed. And I think he just believes in the quality of these players to the point where he's going to go to the mattresses for them. And as long as the players are on board with that, as long as they're comfortable with that, as long as they're okay with waiting around, not knowing what their careers are going to look like, not just in 2024, but well beyond, this is something that could continue to last, and that I don't see a resolution for any of these guys, frankly, anytime soon. And that's a wild thing to say because, yeah, I'm in Phoenix right now, Tony. I'm going to camps today, and I've been to camps recently, and I've talked with guys. Like, baseball's happening, and that there are, you know, I've called them the Boras Four. Because I think Martinez, you know, he's probably going to sign a 1-year deal. But the other guys, they're all looking for long-term deals, you know, like generational money. And teams just are not biting at this point, despite the fact that when you look at MLB standings from last season, and you go through every team in baseball right now, there are like four teams that aren't at least trying to win this year. That's it. It is a more competitive environment than I've seen in a long, long time in this game.
So I have two questions about Boras that I think maybe you can answer, and I think they're important, which is, how is he generally perceived? Might there be not necessarily collusion against him, but just disgust with him? And has he ever misjudged the market? Has he ever done that?
How is he perceived? I think there is a begrudging respect that is mixed with an extreme annoyance, because the way he operates is he will anchor at a really high number, and he expects you to meet him there, and he's not going to move off of it. He is not going to blink. He is going to play chicken. And if that means crashing the car, then that is a consequence that he is ready to accept. And yes, it has ended poorly before. Mike Moustakas, when he was a free agent, got offered a qualifying offer by the Kansas City Royals for $17 million and change. And he turned that down and went into free agency. And his market just never materialized. And he re-signed with the Royals for $6.5 million.
Wow.
There have been other cases, not quite as extreme as that one, but there have been other cases where, you know, he's asked for a big number and hasn't gotten it. And that's to be expected when you have the most players in baseball. There are going to be some swings and misses. He's not the only agent who does this. But because he is clearly the most prominent in terms of just the contracts that he signed for guys, the most successful agent in baseball, there's a lot more attention paid to him and his maneuvering. And, when you have a situation like this where there really aren't a lot of chairs and the music seems to be stopping, You know, how is he going to wiggle his way out of that is the question that I get asked by executives, by fellow agents, by players, by everyone, because they don't see a pathway to a good ending. But, you know, all it takes is a couple of things happening and, you know, owners who have their eyes on contending this year may just say, screw it, and bite the bullet.
Well, that which leads me to the Dodgers, because the Dodgers have made the most noise in the offseason. The Dodgers mm-hmm. have created an enmity. The Giants now hate them. Logan Webb can't sleep at night, even though the Giants signed free agents and all of that. And on a very small level, everybody saw when the Mets failed, and they had spent a bunch of money, and I don't think they spent it as well as the Dodgers, but they sure spread it around. When the Mets failed,
yep.
Buck Showalter was done. And everybody saw that yep. and understood that, including Buck Showalter. Is that kind of pressure on Dave Roberts this year?
100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to suggest that Dave Roberts is in danger of getting fired before he's managed his first game in the 2024 season.
Right,
but
sure.
I think the Dodgers' expectations for this year and for the next few years, particularly as Shohei Ohtani is in his prime, as Mookie Betts is sort of moving toward the latter stage of his career, as is Freddie Freeman, as you see the ascent of some of these guys in the organization, they know their window, while open, may not stay open for as long as you would like. I mean, we've seen situations where teams were set up every bit as well as the Dodgers, seemingly, and, you know, the Cubs, they win in 2016. It looks like they're going to win the World Series for the next 3 years with that core that they had. They didn't even get close. So I think the Dodgers, having won only one championship in this decade-plus long run of dominance in the National League West, feels like they've missed a lot of opportunities. And I think the Dodgers understand that if they don't win this year, then maybe a change is necessary.
That's what, you know, that when you spend this kind of money and you put that lineup out there, it has to land on a manager, I think. A general manager, too, but easier to land on a manager. That's going into the season. That's the story.
Here's why it's not going to land on the general manager. There's a clause in Shohei Ohtani's contract, the key man.
Right, that if he leaves.
Where if Andrew Friedman's gone, Ohtani can opt out of his deal.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. But that, I mean, as if you were to handicap all the big stories going into baseball, everyone would agree Dodgers are 1 through 10, right? It's Dodgers. That's what we want to see, right?
It's Dodgers or some derivation of Dodgers.
Yeah.
To me, it's Dodgers Braves, because the Braves, I'm not sure they're as well set up as the Dodgers, but you could also argue that they might be better set up than the Dodgers, because they've got Ronald Acuna on a very, very team-friendly deal for the next half decade. They've got Ozzie Albies on a team-friendly deal. They've got Austin Riley locked up, Michael Harris locked up, Spencer Strider locked up. You know, you can go on and on. The contract that Alex Anthopoulos, the president of baseball operations, has signed players to. And it's been an absolutely brilliant job of team building by Atlanta. And so you have these two juggernauts that look destined to face off in the NLCS. Now, this is baseball, Tony. You have watched it for long enough that you know what we expect quite often doesn't happen. I don't think anybody saw the Arizona Diamondbacks going to the World Series last year. I don't think anybody saw the Texas Rangers winning the World Series last year. And yet here we are with those two teams having been in the championship game last year. So we can't sit here and anoint the Dodgers and the Braves as these unstoppable forces. Baseball and the nature of the game prevents against that. But God knows that's the NLCS I want to go to. Those are the teams I want to see face off in a seven-game series, because that thing would be a bloodbath. And I
that's
love
totally
to
agreed.
See those two teams.
Totally agreed. Thank you, Jeff. Enjoy Arizona. If you're in North Scottsdale, just go to Wilbon's house. He's there. Go to Wilbon's.
I'm shocked on anybody. He hasn't invited me over. And
it's tragic.
I don't get it.
Just stand outside his gate. Jeff Passan, boys and girls. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Jeff.
All right, Tom. Take care, buddy.
Yeah, we've got email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, now you may think I'm greedy when I ask for free stuff from you.
You may wonder how come I need it when I'm on TV more than the news.
Now, baby, I can buy it with straight cash. Yeah, there ain't no secret about that.
But when I gotta pay for it, it bugs me, even though my wallet is fat.
Well, honey, it ain't your money, 'cause baby, I got plenty of that.
So please send me a big box of that, a free box of wine. A Revolution toaster is the top of the line. Johnny Walker Blue, it make me feel alright. I'll drink it by the kitchen sink on Saturday night. Well, honey, I just love taking free tickets, all free snacks, and a big box of that, a big box of that.
This is so good. This and the one where we're liquid.
Oh, yeah, those Jeremy Vents.
Those are the two best. This yes. is Joe Arrow, Kirsten Ohnstadt, Steve Lipton, Brad Weiss, Patrick Moffitt. It's stunning.
Yes.
It's
love
absolutely
that.
Stunning.
Thanks.
You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com, for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, and you will be thrilled.
And before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, when whippoorwills call and evening is nigh, I hurry to my blue heaven. Turn to the right, you find a little bright light that leads you to my blue heaven. That is Antoine Fats Domino. And this is that period of time in New Orleans where people go insane anyway. So we're crediting Fats with that. Thanks to our guests today, Pat Forty, Jeff Passan. Thanks to our sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. Let's do some emails here. This is from Ross Bridges in Lexington, Kentucky. Hey, old sport, opening with hockey, eh? I miss football, too. Did we open with hockey the other day?
I believe we did.
Is that what we did? Yeah, I can't tell you how much I miss football already. From Tyler Harper in Alberta, Canada. After a long NFL season, I was elated when you began to talk about hockey. My joy was further fulfilled when you began to talk about the great one, Wayne Gretzky, and my beloved Edmonton Oilers. That would have been enough, yet you continue to bring happiness to my cold, snow-covered morning by recognizing the achievements of my boys, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, and then putting the greatness of Gretzky into perspective. I love my Oilers, no matter how frustrating being a fan can be. You made my day. I love it when you talk hockey. Can I be the official Calgary-based, Edmonton-born Oilers fan of the Tony Kornheiser Show? Or at least can you say, eat at Calgary? Here, now I do remember, because we lit behind the curtain.
Yes.
And we talked about the Annie.
Yes, the Annie on PTI.
Yeah, okay,
yes.
I didn't realize it would get this sort of response. Wow.
Very passionate.
From Craig Stevenson in Mobile, Alabama. Your discussion of Wayne Gretzky and his ridiculous hockey stats reminded me of a pastime I have, which is to go on newspapers.com and search a given celebrity to find the first references to him or her in local or national newspapers over the years. As you might expect, Gretzky's exploits were well documented from an early age in his hometown newspaper, The Expositor of Brantford, Ontario. Some of the stats he put up are just insane. Here's a sampling. December 30th, 1968, Gretzky, then 7 years old, scored four goals in Brantford's 7-3 victory over Welland in the first round of a Bantam League hockey tournament. June 5th, 1969, Gretzky, then 8, 6 goals in Brantford's 12-1 victory. This was in La Crosse. June 4th, 1971, Gretzky, 10, struck out 15, hit a single, double, and triple in Dunson Mayfair's 27-10 win over Jack's Snack Bar.
Ooh.
I wish I'd played for Jack's Snack Bar, obviously baseball. The Expositor ran a lengthy feature on the 10-year-old Wayne in October of 1971, calling him superstar for minor sports teams. The story notes he began skating at 3, and he scored 158 goals and passed out 66 assists in 31 games in La Crosse as a 10-year-old. In 76 hockey games that year, my God, he had 196 goals and 120 assists. His coach noted, Wayne is the best novice hockey player in Ontario, if not further. Gee, you think? The Toronto Star first wrote about him at length when he was 14 in 1975, after he'd lost an appeal to play for a high-level amateur team in Toronto because he had not properly established residence in that city. The story notes that in 78 games as an 11-year-old, he scored 333 goals. 78 games. What? That's over 4 a game and had 118 assists. Wow.
Just, well, the great one.
Wow.
Time for the David Sampson. To wake up.
David Sampson, Westport, Connecticut. Gretzky is undoubtedly, maybe we should do hockey more often. Gretzky is undoubtedly the greatest scorer in hockey history and right up there as a puck handler and teammate who made everyone better. Case closed on that. But he didn't revolutionize hockey like Orr. Take a look at defensemen scoring before Orr, and then look at 1969-70, the year he broke out, and also the year he broke Rangers fans' heart. He had 120 points, the first of 6 consecutive years of over 100. He created the offensive defenseman position. His passing was always spot on, and nobody has ever ragged the puck like he did, single-handedly killing off power plays. Hockey changed when Orr appeared, and I'm not sure the same can be said for Gretzky. So who's the greatest? I'll take Orr for his great play and historic significance. Here's the Bob Ryan and Bobby. Wow. Wow. Here's an, this is David Sampson in defense of Bob Ryan. More hockey. My God. Mike Mackler from Wilmington, Delaware, Chuck and Roxy, episode 110. Just a slight correction about Wayne Gretzky's World Hockey Association career. He was signed by the Indianapolis Racers, played there briefly, then went to the Edmonton Oilers. The great one never played for the Cincinnati Stingers. I said he did. That's my mistake. Although his future teammate Mark Messier did. Perhaps I should start a coffee shop to discuss the World Hockey Association. Is the name Cafe Wa taken? WHA? P.S. Put me down for Denny Hamlin in this Sunday's Daytona 500. I watch that every year. I watch some of it. I always like, because it's important.
Sure.
In that sport.
Yeah.
And for a while, it was important to us on PTI because ESPN had the NASCAR contract.
That's right.
Then we lost the contract and they disappeared from our lives. Even though some of the guys who were on with us, Jimmy Johnson, for example, were wonderful to talk to.
Wasn't Brad Doherty?
Keselowski.
Brad Doherty, wasn't he?
Brad Doherty is a race car guy.
Yeah.
Along with being an NBA great. Yeah, no, he's a race car guy. Number one overall pick,
I think. And that reference to Cafe Wa, I think that was an actual club in New York where Chaz Chandler found Jimi Hendrix as a performer.
That may be the case, but I mean, he wanted to do it Cafe Wa's in WHA.
Oh, there you go.
From Bobby Gottfried, my favorite fact about Gretzky and how far ahead he is of everyone else in assists is that you can take away every goal he ever scored, all 894, and he still has more points than anyone. Jaromir Jagr is second all-time in NHL points with 1,921, and Gretzky had 1,963 assists. Add in his goals, and Gretzky is 936 points clear of everyone else. And that's why it's a tough call by Bobby.
That's the tough side of it, yeah.
From Reese in London, Taylor Swift should marry Nick Taylor. That's it. That's the email. That's funny. Taylor. Cam Weens. Camden emailing from Abbotsford, British Columbia, hometown of the Waste Management Phoenix Open champion, Nick Taylor. Nick went to my rival high school, Yale. No, not that Yale, but they like to think it is. Since Wilbon is on his latest crusade against analytics, I'm surprised that he has failed to mention the very anti-analytics viewpoint that, of course, a Canadian of all golfers is going to thrive under the conditions of wet, muddy, beer-drinking yahoos yelling obscenities at you mid-swing. Life up here is one long Buffalo Bills-esque tailgate. That's nice. this is okay. From Joel Harity in Kansas City, Missouri. The interview with Louisa Thomas was fabulous. Bonding over football with my 13-year-old daughter is something I never expected. If I'm honest, it's all because Taylor likes football, and for now she likes Kelsey. As a father of two teenage girls, I'll take all the bonding I can get. If you know, you know. Excuse me. So to the angry fans who don't like seeing Taylor on the TV, go kick rocks, you morons, because you're obviously missing out on a special opportunity with the women in your lives. But we all know her history, and I think I'm ready to help when the inevitable happens. What do you think of this album title for the inevitable breakup of Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce? Travesty with I-S, not E-S. Right. Complete with an album cover of his 87 jersey and her snazzy new coat just lying on the ground as she walks away. I don't know anything about marketing, but I think that's a winner. P.S. Back in December 2022, I had emergency surgery to remove a golf ball-sized meningioma from the front of my brain. However, it could have been one of many errant tee shots from my amateur golf career bouncing off a tree and right back at me. Anyway, listening to your pod made me laugh all day and really lifted my spirits that week and in the weeks of recovery that followed. I'm doing great now. Apparently, I've developed a mind for marketing. Who knew? And that's very nice. It's very nice.
That is.
Claire Natola, who is now in Delaware, Ohio. I didn't know there was such a town as Delaware, Ohio.
Didn't realize that about the Buckeye
Cool
State.
Aunt Claire. In Monday's mailbag, Alex in Springfield, Missouri wrote, please tell Brian Muller to eat it. He and I will be seeing Dan Byrne, at which point you asked in amazement, how does this work? It's called touring. It's an activity undertaken by professional musicians in an effort to deliver their music in a live performance-type situation directly to their fans and to those they hope to turn into fans. Yes, people actually leave their houses to enjoy the experience of listening to live music in venues such as clubs, theaters, concert halls, and arenas. Some of us are even lucky enough to meet Mr. Wright at a concert, but that's a story for another email. When was the last concert you attended, Tony, or should I ask, when was the last concert you attended? I don't know.
The Zombies, maybe?
Maybe the Zombies, couple of years ago, three or four years ago.
Was it at the Strathmore?
No, the Zombies was not at the Strathmore, I don't think. I don't know where the Zombies was.
Was it in Maryland or something like
no,
that?
No, it was in D.C.
It was in D.C.
What are the great music places in D.C.?
Well, that's
Dark a Constitution.
Yeah.
No.
Not the 930 Club. I don't see you going to the 930 Club.
No.
It wasn't Verizon.
No. It was a club that usually did go-go music. It's a theater. And now I'm just blanking on the name of the theater.
Oh, like up by U Street? Like that area?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What is that theater?
Yeah. And that's where we went. That's okay. Where the Zombies
By Ben's Chili Bowl, right?
Yes. By Ben's Chili Bowl. Yeah. I just don't know the name of it.
I will.
So, anyway.
Right now.
All right. If you're out of your bike tonight,
everyone. Is it the Lincoln?
It was not the Lincoln, I don't believe.
Sorry.
I don't know. If you're out of your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Saturday.
Apollonia, the late great.
Twine. The sun rises softly, casting dreams in my mind, dreams in my mind. Cotton candy morning, take me higher. Marshmallow clouds, dots of rainbow, sprinkled sky. Yeah.
on this cotton candy morning. The sky is afire.
Sure.